Mamma Mia, what a night of Beverly Hills. It's Andy's Girls. I just watched part two. So what a journey this recording has been. I watched part one, record two, now record. And damn, it's a tough up for some Kyle in my top five folks everywhere, which I'm sure we'll get into. I think a lot of which, honestly, we got into in part one. But the thing that I kind of can't get over, which is truly of no use in a discussion of part two, is the trailer for part three. Because, you know what, the editing for even trailers where I'm like convinced that the question is directly connected to the answer, you really don't know because the edit is typically misleading. But fuck, if that really is Kyle crying, talking about like they're having conversations about divorce, I'm not surprised that those conversations are happening, but I'm surprised that she said that on camera and not in any kind of critical way, just like, damn, that is like, that's intense. I mean, I do not know that there appears to be a future for Kyle and Mo to move forward in marital bliss. It does not seem as realistic as potentially a parting of ways, which I think is so sad, but also maybe just the next right step for both of them. But to hear her potentially say that, because again, I don't know with the trailer. And also, this is the moment that feels like it might be more of a kind of manipulative edit, is Kyle having to answer to questions about her relationship with Morgan and kind of hemming and hawing, which I do believe. And then Kathy saying, you know, don't be embarrassed or you shouldn't be embarrassed. If that has to do with Morgan, I think that's a big window into what Kathy knows about Kyle's relationship with Morgan and how she's trying to sort of like advise her about being open. I cannot for the life of me make heads or tails of why Kyle has been navigating this avenue of like the audience is being irresponsible in gossiping about things versus like gossiping about things that are inaccurate versus genuine sort of cagey silence. And then these seeming paparazzi shots that are all kind of like Google Cal organized with Backgrid and the music video. And it's all kind of confusing to me. It would make more sense, I think, to say that this is something that the Bravo community just kind of dreamed up without seeing Morgan's participation this season and the energy with them and also the paparazzi stuff and also the music video. But that's never really been a focus of mine on the pod and honestly IRL. It just so happens that the focus of the show is kind of gearing and steering in that direction. And that has more of, that's made a mark in my head more than previously, because I've honestly just been really consumed with the Kyle and Mo of it all. So we'll see what happens in part three. I'm guessing that there might be some potential breakthrough moments, but I don't know. I'm not sure. There were some difficulties with part two that I had, to be totally honest, and a lot of them had to do with Kyle. The ending of the episode to me was really important and clarifying, I think, for Sutton to say things that she needed to say that feel to me pretty obvious, which is like for Kyle to kind of laugh around
you know, jokes, comments that other people are making, and then to barely take responsibility in saying, well, you know, when Teddy said that you had a drinking problem, I didn't agree with her. But if you look at that clip, Kyle, like, essentially is laugh, you know, doing that little like, oh, my goodness, as she like turns to, you know, drink her seltzer. Like, she's turning away from the camera. She's not denying anything. She knows exactly what Teddy is saying. And if you don't believe that Teddy is working off of some sort of extensive outline that she did in their little sister circle directly before recording, or if Kyle has an understanding because of the tension between her and Sutton and what Teddy might do with that, maybe as a way of saying thanks for like being on Watch What Happens or whatever else. I mean, come on. It's for Kyle to not even apologize, but to be like, well, I didn't say the thing that you are saying that I said, I just stayed quiet. It feels like she's asking an awful lot of everyone but herself, and then blaming that on the people who were close to her. That's frustrating to watch. It's frustrating to watch also her like deny any responsibility for the constant digs and quips and insinuations about Sutton's drinking, Sutton allegedly having an eating disorder, which she doesn't totally understand, even in the whole like, oh, I would say it again about Sutton pushing food around a plate. It's so inappropriate. And she's doing the thing that Anne Marie got in trouble for, but she also actively participated in that with that scene. I don't know why Anna Marie isn't bringing this up, but maybe she just doesn't want to bring Kyle into the mess. She wants to keep her side of the couch in order. But Kyle played a pretty big role in feeding information to Anna Marie. And Anna Marie, either because she believed it or because she felt like this is her in to the show, so she needs to pay respect to the person who's introducing her, or for whatever else, didn't actually turn on Kyle in a way that I think could have been, I mean, at least for me as a viewer, interesting. But what Sutton is getting at is the most important point, which is like, it's the insinuation of it. Like, we're spending a lot of time on talking about what terrible friends Garcelle and Sutton are for asking about Kyle's marriage. Meanwhile, they were right. There were issues with Kyle's marriage. I understand that Kyle's saying, I wasn't ready to talk about it, but then don't go on the show. Like, say you can't, I hate to say it, but say you can't film the show. If you need to take a break to figure out what's going on with your relationship, take a break from the show, say you can't film. But it's not the fault of your cast members in your quote unquote friend circle when you are not being clear about something that seems like there's a significant change in your relationship and dynamic, which you even addressed at the beginning of the season. Like, I understand Kyle saying, I was trying to figure out I needed privacy, but you're not on a show called Let's Be Private unless it's other people's issues. It's confusing and frustrating to watch her compare Sutton making out with her Uber driver to the disillusion, or at least separation, of Kyle and her husband of what, like 30-ish years? And to compare the two, Kyle saying, well, I didn't talk about my marriage, but you didn't talk about, you know, like, give him a little smoochy smooch to your Uber pool gentleman friend. Like, there's no comparison here. It feels like we are constantly comparing apples and diamonds, and that's really unfair to everybody else on that couch. And there are any number of clips and moments of Kyle doing her job in seasons past and shying away and blaming other people when they do theirs. That's a human instinct. And people can say that she might have the right to privacy. She absolutely does, but not on this show. She doesn't get that every year for 13 seasons. At a certain point, if there's something going, here's the thing. If she wants to say she has the right to privacy after 13 years of being in the show, God bless her. She has every right to say that. But she cannot deny that people asking questions about the very real seeming problems in her marriage, which, spoiler alert, turned out to be very real, that is them going too far or being bad friends, because then she can't really say she was friends with anyone that she filmed with Pryor when she was asking questions. And maybe she wasn't really friends with them. Maybe she was co-stars. But, like, I don't think that Sutton and Garcelle went too far in that. I really don't. And I think the end of the day is that something was going on in her marriage. And she was focusing on, well, I didn't know that there was a ring that you could buy after someone cheated. And don't you know that I can buy things on my own? And it's like, that's not really the ring didn't mean a thing. It's not really about the ring as a primary example and the only reason to the only way to define whether or not something is going on with you and Mo. It's everything else altogether. The reason people felt something was going on with her and Mo is because they felt something was going on with her and Mo. We saw it when the cameras were shooting. Something was going on with her and Mo. We have no idea of the timeline. I actually don't know that we are going to get it. I assume that that would be a big part of the reunion, but it doesn't even feel like we're inching toward that. The only time, obviously, for that to happen would be in part three, but I don't know that that's going to take place. It would be odd to me if it didn't, but it feels like it might not because we're kind of like tiptoeing around stuff. Two parts in? Really? I don't know, man. Like, it's not that I'm not enjoying the reunion cycle, but fuck me. I mean, if we're not even going to pretend that insinuating this shit about Sutton is what happened, I don't know how we're going to get past that. And can we also just take a moment, like, as Sutton said, she was really upset about Kyle saying, all I have is cashmere and a horse, like, which Kyle herself brought up, you know, you bought a horse this season and you got a dating coach. We just watched how many clips over the course of part two of Sutton talking? She didn't even, I don't even think Merce was addressed, but Sutton talking about her marriage, the control her ex-husband had over her, the search for herself, a vulnerable conversation with her daughter, like the way that she has tried to find a new identity for herself, the fact that, which Sutton had in a conversation directly with Kyle privately, the fact that releasing the ashes was, for Merce, was also connected to releasing ashes in absentia for her father, and also kind of like in the confessional, which obviously Kyle saw, Sutton trying to figure out sort of the death of one identity and birth of another when it comes to her ex-husband, divorce, everything else, the moving to London, all of that, for you to just like minimize it and make it into this joke of all she's talked about was Santos was the horse and the cashmere is so disingenuous. And it's honestly disrespectful to the level of vulnerability that Sutton shared this season. Obviously, she also totally fucked up. I mean, the Magic Mike thing, not great for Sutton. Also, the $7 thing was obviously her being she. I was in the room when that happened. It was at a reality TV event with her and Cynthia Bailey, hosted by friends of the pod, Evan and Danny, and they did a fantastic job. But like, that was obviously, I mean, I think I have the full video of it. I should just look through my phone and post it. I may have when it actually happened, but it was like, I think a couple minutes long of like, some sass and shade. I might have only had a part of it, to be honest. I forget when I started recording because I was laughing so hard. But I just, it's frustrating to watch Sutton's level of vulnerability and also work on the show be minimized to that extent while Kyle is actively trying to say, well, I can't be vulnerable because I'm keeping stuff private. But it's not like you're sharing everything. Meanwhile, Sutton is in fact sharing a lot. She just shares it differently. Maybe she's a little quieter with it. Maybe she's sharing it in confessionals. Maybe she's sharing it after the fact, after she like seemingly acts out and acts poorly. And also, speaking of acting poorly, we need to talk about that elevator for one little second, because the way that Erica and I think Dorit and certainly Kyle were talking about the fact that there is no chance that an elevator would have stopped, and if Erica had control over an elevator bank, she would be a billionaire by now. Well, it's not like I necessarily want to cash a check that she's written today, but I mean, a girl could try. Monopoly money is still green and also some other colors. I find it odd, hard to believe that a produced reality TV production team wouldn't potentially be, I don't know, staying in touch with Mikey. And if the cast is gathered around an elevator bank, I actually don't think it's an obscene, wild, couldn't possibly come true possibility for someone. It could be Erica. It absolutely might not. Like a producer to text Mikey and be like, okay, we're in the elevator bank. We're on X floor. I actually don't think that's an insane. Of all of the things that production has done to ensure a certain level of drama and surprise, to have them stop on their floor is like not outside the realm of possibility. Is it possible that didn't happen and it was just a happy accident? 100%. But to suggest that like Sutton saying, yeah, this could have been orchestrated by Erica, wink, wink, but also by production is not a huge outside the realm of possibility, completely obscene shock. You know what I'm saying? Unlike Tom's dementia, I guess, which there are certain moments where Erica would be able to kind of like ride off into the sunset of whatever reality it is she's been trying to present about Tom's frame of mind. And in those moments, it's very helpful to have someone like Crystal, because to my understanding, and I forget the details, but I get into this on an upcoming episode of Andy's Girls with one of the participants, friend of the pod, from the Hustler and the Housewife part deux. I get into this with my guest, who's a legal expert, about Tom's ability to stand trial and the fact that it does appear, according to the court, that what his team was alleging while he's like walking into court in slippers and whatnot, because I guess the court, you know, his lawyers were so focused on, you know, obviously defending him and ensuring that people were aware of his mental status that they forgot to put on shoes. Like, there are genuine, real examples from experts of the fact that his seeming diagnosis does not match up with like medical reality, which is something I totally stayed away from when there was initial conversation about him not, him being in decline, because I didn't think it was funny. I didn't think it was content. But now that the court has proven that it doesn't appear to be exactly, spoiler alert, as Tom has presented and as Erica has certainly pushed extremely hard on the last couple seasons of BH, there's something to be said for having someone on the cast who has a relationship with a leading Alzheimer's Association and is giving some stats of like, it does not make sense if you have this arc of 9 years from a diagnosis to, you know, if there's like a 9 year, which I actually didn't know that it was 9 years long, with Alzheimer's, which is a terrible, terrible, terrible disease that my family is certainly impacted by. I think most families are. When it comes to like insinuating things versus the actual reality happening, Sutton thinking that an elevator bank may have been produced versus what we have been led to believe about Tom, produced extremely hard by him and his former now estranged wife. I mean, come on, let's keep it real. I mean, at least the elevator bank may have been done by production. Like, we're not even talking about what Erica has done in, you know, talking about Tom's decline at exactly the right moment when it seemed to work best for her and for him. Most honestly, most importantly, him. And it's not to say he's not in decline, but it is to say the court found he was able to stand trial. And so who's to say? Wishing for him the very whatever not best is. And I guess we'll get more of that as once the trial begins. Who knows how long this journey will take. And I'm excited for that upcoming AG because it gets into a lot of the nitty gritty. And I'm on European time. Okay, I barely remember at this point. But I just, some of this stuff is like, oh, what are you trying to insinuate, that he was lying? Yeah, I think that's what's happening here. Although I didn't understand the moment, the kind of like audio cut of Crystal and Garcelle's side conversation of like, well, then she's lying. I actually sort of didn't understand that point, just in the direct specifics of what they were discussing right before. But I assume that will be clarified at some point. And I was appreciative for Crystal saying something. I was also really appreciative for Garcelle, although that was a tough segment between her and Dorit and talking about the robbery. Although there was something to be said for, I think, a couple segments later when Dorit was talking about the importance of language and Garcelle was like, LOL. Like, and was it a cruel confessional moment of her deftly, you know, taking a sip of that straw, the straw that truly stirs the drink, and making the comment about her jewelry? 100%. Was that cruel and potentially unfair and cutting? Like, absolutely. Did she have genuine questions backing that up where it wasn't just like a smart ass comment, but questions that she had about the robbery? Yeah. And are there still, I mean, I don't go down any conspiracy theories. I don't think there's any value in that. I think it's kind of like a cringe look. Not to say that Garcelle is, but just to say for me, just genuinely as a Bravo viewer, but it just the timing of it for her to have had two robberies. Is it three now? It's at least two, because there was the Christmas card one, obviously the one that we all know about. It probably doesn't help matters for Dorit that she and PK have not had to answer questions about seeming large financial issues that they find themselves in. You would think that not having to answer to those questions by cast members would help you evade the truth. But then when big things happen, people are going to connect their own dots potentially completely inappropriately and incorrectly. But if you haven't had the conversation on camera, people are going to have it on your behalf. And it's not like there aren't seeming significant financial troubles that they find themselves in. And I don't know how you get around that at a certain point, but it seems like they've been able to. It's wild. If this is Dorit's last season, it might, genuinely might not be. Also, if there's like tension with her and Kyle, I know that Teddy Joe's whole strategy is to say that Dorit doesn't have any relationships with anyone. So off she goes and maybe I'll fill that slot. But the flip side of that is if Dorit and Kyle are at odds, I mean, maybe keep Dorit and see how that kind of plays out. I did kind of appreciate the moment where Kyle's like, well, I feel better. And Dorit said, I don't. So we need to figure this out. God, it was honestly sort of a wild, weird part two. It did feel like the theme was a little bit of you can't play stupid and smart at the same time. God help me for quoting that woman, but it was that. It was a little bit of Sutton quoting Denise saying, you know, watch the show. It felt like a little bit of a suspended universe of exactly how long are we all supposed to pretend that we're not seeing the things that we're watching? Like, exactly. So I guess one of the points of being a housewife is to live in your own kind of like isolated at points world where you're pushing your reality, because maybe that's how you felt at a given time, plus the reality of what other people are experiencing, plus when you meet up with them, plus the edit and everything else. I understand the ways that Kyle maybe feels her reality is the reality of what occurred, but I just don't know, is it that she's not able to be an active listener, or that she disagrees? I guess you could find contradiction with anything that someone is saying to you if you look hard enough, but like feeling also isn't fact. And it's difficult to watch her refuse to take any responsibility because she just hates Sutton right now. That's not really enough for me. And her behavior on the after show making jokes about Merce, for example, and then saying, I can do this because I'm mad at her, is so emotionally immature and cruel. And her ability to just refuse to at least give Sutton credit for what she has shared without mocking or minimizing it is frustrating. And it's frustrating because Kyle herself has also shared a lot. And I just can't imagine if Sutton had said some snide, which she would never do, but some snide comment about that celebration of life, how Kyle would have reacted. Because Kyle is not the only person on the show going through something. Kyle's loss when it comes to her best friend is an unbelievably tragic, upsetting circumstance. And I give her all of the credit in the world for sharing that with us. But every person on this show has their own story. They have the right to own it. And they, God, Lord, help me for quoting her. What's happening? The ghosts of Beverly Hills past are haunting this recording. And I won't stand for it.
Paris is always a good idea, and when I schlep on over to Europe, to my favorite city in the world, I bring with me a few important phrases that I have learned from housewives. C'est bon, chic c'est la vie. Je m'appelle the Countess, n'est-ce pas, Luann? And while those key phrases are important when speaking to any French bravoholic, for other matters of life, that's where Rosetta Stone comes in. Rosetta Stone is the trusted expert for 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered, including, of course, French. It features fast language acquisition. It immerses you in so many ways. There's no English translations, so you really learn to speak, to listen, and to think in that language. It's an intuitive process. You pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. J'adore Chris Manzo. Et toi? There's a speech recognition filter which gives you feedback on your pronunciation. It's convenient with desktop and app options, and it's an amazing value. Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership has all 25 languages for any and all trips and language needs in life. That's lifetime access to all 25 language courses Rosetta Stone offers for 50% off. A steal. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, AGs can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today. Today. Spoiler alert, I watch a lot of Bravo. And when I'm not watching Bravo, I'm sitting in the cloth having a moment of spiritual growth. And when that's not happening, I'm living here in New York where there is a lot to do and not a lot of time to do it. The last thing that I want to be thinking about, let alone worrying about, is my hair. Now, I have wavy hair naturally. It also has color processing, which is surprising because I am a spiritual blonde. And as a result, I don't want to have to worry about frizz. That's why I love Way's anti-frizz cream. It works for my hair texture. It works for having wavy hair. It smells great. There are notes of bergamot, Italian lemon. You guys know I just went to Italy. It was for moments like this, violet and more. Having used a lot of products in my hair in the past, I don't like a heavy feeling, especially when you have wavy hair. That's incredibly important, which is why I love the anti-frizz cream. It makes my hair look like me just a little bit better. Way's new anti-frizz cream provides immediate frizz control that lasts up to 72 hours. It helps reduce and repair split ends. And according to a consumer perception study, 90% of participants agreed that their hair looks less frizzy. And I would like to know what that consumer perception study has to say about some original cast members of The Real Housewives of New York. You'll be way obsessed with Way's bestsellers. They're leave-in conditioner, detox shampoo, hair oil, gloss, and so much more. Frizz-free up your schedule with Way. Go to THE
OUAI.com and enter promo code Andy for 15% off any product. That's THEOUAI.com, promo code Andy. C'est bon, c'est bon.
But there's something to be said for, like, I don't know, making space for other people's stories, but maybe that's what you do when you're not on Housewives, when you're just like living in the real world. At a certain point, I guess it takes a lot of emotional, you know, Kyle's doing a lot of working out. She says Andy touching her muscles and whatnot, but it's like, where's the emotional muscle here to enable a former friend, now foe, to be able to experience vulnerability without you making fun of it? Because there's a difference between Sutton being like, hey, something's up with your marriage and like we need to fucking talk about it, and you referencing and insinuating that she has a drinking problem, finding yourself just magically in the room when other friends of yours, close friends, happen to be using words that you get to say you didn't utter, except then you did, but in other ways. Like, it just, it gets frustrating at points because I understand that Kyle's dealing with a lot of difficulty and challenge, but I don't think that Sutton and Garcelle are wrong. And even though Sutton herself is also not acknowledging and taking responsibility for some of her behavior, for being shitty in the joke about Erica and $7, for the stuff with Magic Mike. It's like when you hear more about the Magic Mike of it all, the fact that she had been told by her ex-husband that very day that he was moving to London, so was their minor child, and she would be as well. To kind of understand that information and have that doesn't take away from Sutton being rude to like Erica's friends and colleagues. It doesn't take away from that. But I would think for Kyle, for example, to just listen to this, let alone what Sutton has shared with her one-on-one, to just kind of rebuke it and cast it aside is so insensitive for someone who's demanding sensitivity and privacy on her end. It's hard to have one but not the other, and yet Kyle seems to find a way. I don't know. It feels like a tough, I mean, understatement of the year. Feels like a little bit of a tough season for Kyle. And I say this again for the 18th time as someone who truly does have Kyle in my top five. I really genuinely, like, I love Kyle. I think she's a great housewife. I have a lot of empathy for her and her journey. I also can see some like glaringly obvious contradictions, which a person can say is absolutely human and we all behave in that manner, but she's not treating other people like they're human and have the right to make mistakes. She's essentially asserting that she is the only person when it comes to, I guess, her versus Sutton and a little bit with Dorit, that she's like the only person allowed to have feelings and to act upon them. And that can be difficult. It can just be frustrating because she's not taking responsibility. Like that stupid Watch What Happens clip with goddamn Teddy Jo Garrett was really frustrating to watch. I remember watching the episode and just being so fucking annoyed. But to watch it in the context of Sutton being like, yeah, this thing happened and you're not going to manipulate me into saying that you had nothing to do with it, Kyle's response was so maddening. And I understand that she does not want to give Sutton an inch. I like completely, genuinely understand it. And yet it still doesn't answer to the fact that she behaved in a really shitty way. And there's a difference between talking about a person's marriage and insinuating that someone has an addiction and insinuating that someone has an eating disorder. I don't know how to make people, and by people, I don't mean AGs, but like the cast, understand that these things aren't equal here. Like it's sort of, not sort of, it's dangerous to use potential questions of alcohol addiction as a form of manipulation and shame. It's and gossip. It's not okay. And to connect that with health condition that Sutton has and to connect the health condition repeatedly on the after show with joking about the fact that Sutton was on a trip and like couldn't eat a sandwich because she was choking because she has this esophageal. She has an esophagus condition and literally has trouble chewing things. And to connect that with her having disordered eating, which is the thing that Anna Marie said all season, where do you think Anna Marie got that from? She got it from Kyle. It's like we're all pretending that Kyle wasn't stirring all of this up, but talking about a very real tension in her marriage is the worst possible thing a person could do. I mean, we're all focused on Kyle's kids and like, God forbid they hear something or how is this going to affect Kyle's family? That's really a conversation that the kids should have with Kyle and her husband because they signed up for reality TV. So it's like at the end of the day, if you don't want to hear people talking about your parents' marriage, I certainly understand that, but that's the responsibility of your parents signing up for this universe. Like Portia, we've seen Portia since she was 2 and now going to college, like filming that scene talking about the divorce with Portia, I actually didn't think that was as upsetting as Howard Stern did, for example, in a clip that I heard where he was saying it was like the worst, essentially like a terrible thing to do as a parent to include your child. I think it's a difficult kind of journey to figure out when you are signing up your family for reality TV well before your kids are in a position to consent. But I do think, I think that it is a sort of a tense, difficult gray area. But I think with other aspects of Kyle talking about the fact that she didn't want anyone talking about her relationship or marriage because of the impact on the kids. What about the impact for Sutton's kids? Like, hello. And Garcelle's kids? When we're talking about Garcelle's son finding out that 2 of her cast members were joking about him being mistreated by Erica last season, like, are we aware that other people in the cast have children who also have the right to be protected as Kyle's kids seemingly do? Kyle's 3 adult children and her teenager. It is a little confusing at points. I know we see Kyle's family much more than we do Sutton's, for example, and there are reasons for that, dealing with the divorce settlement and I guess her agreeing or having to agree that her minor children would not be on camera, which is why her daughter Porter, I believe now is, because Porter's of age. Porter's in college now. It's or going to college. She's 18 and so can make the choice for herself of how she wants to be filmed. I think the conversation around kids being on Housewives and reality TV and consent is a difficult one. I mean, I don't have any, I haven't been on reality TV aside from popping up at a couple New York finales, but there was a circumstance in my life where my dad wrote a book about a very personal, until that point, private time that I actually wasn't aware of in the days immediately following my brother being rendered a quadriplegic from a diving accident. My dad wrote a book about the 10 days in the hospital immediately following that accident and whether my parents were coming to the decision of his quality of life and whether or not he should continue to live. That book was published, and it was about a situation I wasn't aware of until I read a galley of the book, which had been also serialed on the front page of the newspaper in Rhode Island, the Providence Journal. I remember walking into a classroom at school and someone had like put it up on a wall and I was like, oh, this is interesting. And then the book came out and I walked into English class one day and there was like one of those poster boards. Someone had done a book report on this book that my dad wrote. And I was in a position where nobody asked my permission if I wanted this story to be told. I wasn't aware of it until well into the book's release. And I'm not comparing what I experienced, which is certainly on a micro scale, to what the Umansky kids have gone through, but to say it's a tricky area when it comes to how a person, you know, head of a family, potentially husband or wife, decides to include children in a sort of public circumstance when they're not in a position to truly give consent or they're not asked to. And I think there could be a little bit more sensitivity to how some of these shitty behaviors experienced by other people in the cast can affect kids we don't see on camera, but certainly who are aware of the conversation or jokes taking place about their parent who is. I mean, Garcelle talking about the fact that her son at 8 Googled his father or maybe their marriage or whatever it was and found out at that point that his parents were had gotten a divorce because his dad had cheated on his mom. I mean, Jesus. I mean, also, sidebar, the fact that her ex-husband has not had a conversation with his sons about that is wild to me, not in relation to dating, not in relation to how you should treat your partner. I understand it was a wildly public nightmare, I'm sure, for both of them in very different ways. But to not have a convo with your kid knowing that your child knows about this is a wild form of denial that I don't think is in any way healthy. But I guess that is one of many burdens that Garcelle has to handle on behalf of the person who actually is the one who fucked up. But anyway, the ability to like look up this stuff about your parents, especially if they are well known as Garcelle certainly is, and her ex-husband. I don't know if he's still working as an agent, but it sounded like he was a very high-profile agent or manager at the time. I can't imagine the public, the feeling of trying to translate public gossip for your child in a way that feels like safe and possibly healthy. And then you introduce housewives into all of this. I'm sure it's a very, very difficult decision for anyone joining Housewives to try to figure out how this is going to impact my family and my kids, and trying to weigh the reality of the opportunity that that presents and the consistency. I mean, Garcelle talked about the fact that she joined reality TV because it was a better lifestyle for her as a parent. She was able to stay home. She didn't need to travel to work. And people sometimes make jokes about, well, certainly not in Garcelle's case, she was incredibly successful well before she joined Housewives. She's a very, very well-known name. But there is a joke with like maybe the Rinnas of the world or other famous faces where it's like taking joining reality TV is, you know, a step downward. And the reality is, I don't think that's the case. I think it depends on how you come off on Housewives. It certainly can have an impact in your future and how you try to monetize your time on Housewives. And if you're able to do so, it's really dependent on being very beloved or very hated. I think those are the two routes that might make you a couple bucks. But the fact that someone who is very successful in her field and very well known would choose to go this route, which isn't a demotion, it's just a different avenue to get her where she wants to be, which is to, ironically enough, open up her private life and talk about and show aspects of her parenting journey, but do that in a way that enables her to feel more secure as a parent. Like, that's the sort of paradox, I think, of housewives and parenting that isn't often thought about, because it's usually typically the whole conversation about privacy, like the whole thing with the Umansky kids and the conversation about like the negative aspects and the toxicity and the conversations that are going to exist about maybe your parent or parents or their marriage or money or something else that's going to maybe have a terrible impact short term on a child, just in seeing the ways that their parent might be spoken about negatively, like who's to say, but also it can provide opportunity and stability in an environment that might also feel a bit destabilizing it's kind of it's fascinating to me to think about. And I'm appreciative to Garcelle for bringing it up, because I did think it was a really important point. God, now I feel like I just, the mercy of it all, I'm surprised that really, maybe I missed it, although I watched the end of part two literally like four times. Because there was something about Kyle and Sutton where I felt like I was kind of outside of myself in watching it, because it felt like it was missing, not that it was missing a through line, but it was like they were speaking in two totally different languages. But I think for most of us at home, we're like, we understand what that person is saying. It just doesn't necessarily feel connected to what the other one said. I don't know where this is going to lead. And also, because we saw in the trailer for part three that Sutton gets unexpectedly ill, I don't know where into shooting for part three that happens. Like if Kathy sort of just comes out on stage, she's maybe the build up to some difficult questions. There's a question that Andy said of like something that Erica said that's like building up. It's a complicated, you know, it's not going to be an easy question to answer. And then Sutton falls ill. I assume that that's at the beginning-ish of part three. So I don't know where Sutton and Kyle land. It doesn't seem like they're in a good, solid place right now. I also don't really have any understanding of when filming will pick up next season. I don't know if they're going to make major casting decisions. I assume that Anna Marie won't be back in any capacity. She really doesn't seem to have any relationships with anyone in the cast aside from like defending Dorit, who then does the same. It doesn't appear that they're friends. Like maybe there's some sort of friendliness, but that feels more strategic than not. She doesn't seem to have a relationship with anybody else there. In fact, many of the people abhor her. So my guess is that she won't be back. I think Dorit is the only other real question mark. I don't think anyone else is going anywhere. Although, as Kyle said in the text to Dorit, that she's maybe thinking about taking a break. I don't think that would be the worst idea. And I really do love Kyle, but I think maybe if she does not want to discuss what's going on in her life, and she really, and I'm saying this not being a dick for the first time in my life or third, if she really truly does not want to have public focus on her life, and she does not want to discuss her friendship with Morgan, or she feels like that's nobody's business, and she doesn't want to discuss the Mauricio of it all, maybe she should take a break. Maybe she should just take a look, put herself on pause. Candy did it. It doesn't mean that you're fired. We know how much power Kyle has. It absolutely can be 100% her decision, and just try to figure stuff out with Mauricio. I wouldn't blame her for that. I don't think we deserve necessarily to see these parts of her life. I think that if we are taking her at her word that she really truly does not want to talk about these things, and I'm not saying this in any kind of like, well, you should go off the show. I genuinely mean this. Like, it might be a good idea for her to just take a little bit of time, skip a season. She can always come back. She has so much genuine seniority and power in her role in Beverly Hills. I am so confident, based on absolutely no information or knowledge or background or history, that she could take a season off and then come back. I don't think that anyone would bat an eye, and I think people would understand. And I think it's hard to sort of have the argument that it's nobody's business when you're on reality TV. So make it nobody's business. Make it so that people still believe it's their business and they're going to talk on social, but they're not going to have content to focus on. I don't think that would be the worst idea. I also don't think that's like losing in any way. I don't think she owes that to anyone. If there's one thing that Kyle has learned, and she has learned, I think, many things in the last couple years, it's that she doesn't necessarily, and she's said this essentially, but in a different way to try to garner a different response. I don't know how much of her life she owes to anyone anymore. She's, you know, come up with all these different streams of income. Obviously, she has ownership of the agency. She's, you know, the Halloween movies, her producing work, whatever else she's else she's got cooking. I mean, she genuinely is in a really creative, successful place. And if she has a lot of challenges going on in her personal life, and maybe there's just like a couple really big hurdles for them to get through to try to figure out the next step here, if there is in fact a step to take, it might not be the worst idea for her to do that off camera. Because I think right now to push the argument of like, I am being asked to do something that nobody else has, or I'm being asked to do something that's unfair to me, but seem to be fair play to other people when they've come across really difficult challenges in their personal life that have been exacerbated for and examined for housewives. I just don't know how long you can kind of push that argument. I mean, you are doing it sitting next to Erica, you know, who has been challenged and has had to answer to a lot. Also, I don't understand. Erica saying she went to see the victims on advice of counsel does sort of explain separation that was felt in the meeting with her and the victims, which I do not think went well, and get into on an upcoming Andy's Girls when we talk about it more in depth. I did not understand her saying in that cold way, same way she did with the earrings of like, we're challenging the law, whatever, we're just going to appeal and yada, 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 where she's not answering anything. And it's just so severely said why she said, I cannot explain why I went to speak with victims. Because then it went into that other thing of a check being deposited in an account or being cashed in an account. I don't know if that's why she was saying it. She was saying, I cannot explain why I went to speak with the victims because I wanted to get more information about what was going on with Tom. Or she's saying, I cannot explain why I went to speak with the victims because I can't explain it because I don't understand it. I was just told to go through. I was just told to do this because of an attorney or something else. I really couldn't tell you. I have no idea. But it was confusing to me. It was genuinely confusing. Also, sidebar, Kathy saying that Kyle and Mo had been, or Kyle had been dealing with stuff for 3 to 4 years of their marriage, to me makes a lot of sense. It does. I think this whole, it just happened. And I think this has been slowly building and, you know, circumstances and challenges resulted in Kyle feeling like she was reaching a crisis point. But I don't think she woke up one day and it was just like, oh, crisis point. I think that if something has been happening for the last couple years, that to me makes a lot of sense. And we'll see. We'll see what happens in the next episode. Maybe it will feel like somewhat of a healing, in the words of Whitney Rose, somewhat of a healing journey on BH for Kyle. Maybe there will be the ability to just kind of like have a really uncomfortable round of conversation that might push forward some either connections with members of the cast or just freedom. Because sometimes you just need to say the thing out loud that feels impossible to say and incredibly painful to say. But once it's out, you don't have to keep it buried. And there's some good that can happen as a result of that. So who knows? I mean, I feel like a little, I don't know, I think part one had me more than part two. Although this whole Kyle v. Sutton ending part two was a tough watch, but it's happening and we'll see how Kathy's involvement in part three might sort of adjust the temperature a little bit accordingly. And we'll see if any of the tension that Kyle experienced with Dorit might come up in questions that Andy might pose to Kathy and P3. So we'll see. On that note, guys, thanks for listening. Oh my God, I can't wait to watch Miami. I cannot wait to watch Miami. I'm sure it was excellent. I'm really excited to see it. Speaking of things I was excited to see, an all new Patreon episode is up now with my live reaction to the Jersey trailer. All my thoughts and feels on the new beginning of NJ with Melissa and Tree in separate camps. Jackie jumping like a leapfrog from here to there. Jen Fessler this playing a big old part of that trailer, and maybe some adjustments because of the reality reckoning to what they wanted to hype when it comes to a drama and escalation for NJ. So you can listen to that episode at patreon.com/andyscrolls. Follow me on Instagram at Dame Galley. A little bit of a late at night 2 a.m. recording. Just sharing my deep thoughts. So I'm excited to watch, honestly, Beverly Hills Part 1 and Part 2 again before recording with some upcoming guests, just to give it a little bit of a chance to digest. But in the meantime, what a delight to deep dive. Thanks to all of you for listening, and we will chat soon. Au revoir.